Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Are my loyal listeners, thank you for your continued support. And remember, hit that subscribe button, everybody. We have an amazing show for y'all, because boarding the mothership is Adele Pomeranke. You know her as Kemi on Star Trek Picard. Now come aboard as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Miss Pomeranke. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Totally my pleasure. Welcome to the show. So I always start off with a question of inspiration. So what inspired your love for acting and who were your earliest influences?
Inspired my love of acting. Film acting or just like in general?
Well, we'll go with in general. And then if you want to do specific, feel free.
Okay. So acting, I think my love of acting started with dance when I was a little kid and just performing on stage. Mm. So like theater and things like that. I think actually my love for acting, though, I had a teacher, and I'm just thinking about this. I had a teacher in high school that he was a theater teacher. I decided to take theater. I had to take an extra class, and I was kind of a troublesome kid. And I took his class, and he put on some productions, and he actually gave me some fun roles, and he gave me a chance. He didn't just put me in the back and make me be a tree, right?
Yeah.
You know, the troubled teen. And I was like, oh, I think I like this. I think I could actually maybe do more of this, not just singing and dancing, but actually talking. Mm. Earliest influences, probably my grandmother because of her performing background. And then like celebrity wise. Oh, that's a tough one. I used to watch the Lawrence Welk show with my grandfather. So just anybody and everybody that was on the show. And there was always like big A-listers on that show back in the day. So probably that show. And then I used to watch I Dream a Genie and Bewitched. So all the old 60s and 70s
shows. Oh, wow. You were watching the classics, huh?
I didn't know that I was. I thought that's what everybody else was watching. But that's what I grew up around. So
that is awesome.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they're classics, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also think it's great that it was a teacher that inspired you. Sometimes teachers don't seem to get enough credit, and it's great that you can shout out to one.
I know. I hope I remember his name before we're done with this so I can say it. Gosh.
Well, if you do remember, feel free to send me the email. I'll stick it in the show notes. And who knows, maybe you'll be watching and be like, I got a shout out, but my life was worth it.
He was very inspiring. I'm sure lots of people have lots of good things to say about him.
That is fantastic. I'm sure somewhere he knows that he made a difference.
He did.
Mm-hmm. So you also have a long history as a dancer and a ballerina. So what got you interested in that?
So my grandmother, she was a professional dancer. Huh. She danced in New York and she did ballet and everything. I have her photo hanging up here, you know, and a little pan up. I tend to do that so people can see her. She's a lovely lady. Yes. Aww. Yes, but she really inspired a lot of it for me. First, it was kind of like, hey, you should do dance, right? Kind of pushing on me. And then I really fell in love with it. And then my ballet teacher, Lisa Price, back home, she really was very encouraging and kept me going through it. Very much like that teacher in high school when I was busy smoking cigarettes and skateboarding instead of being serious about anything.
So... why? Because I mean, dance covers a lot of different types of dance. So what was it about ballet that grabbed your interest the most?
Ballet. I think because it was difficult. Mm. I liked a challenge. And I've always taken to things very quickly. I'm a very quick learner. I've been very graced with that gift of being able to just pick up stuff really quickly and just be good at it. But it was nice to find something that really challenged me. I liked the challenge. I liked the humblingness of it because it never gets easier. You just get better.
So how has your experience as a dancer, specifically ballerina, helped you become a better actor?
Self-discipline. Self-discipline, being humbled. Ballerinas, not a lot of people do ballet, but if you get into the company world, you realize that not one person is better than another, and you're so quick and easy to be replaced. So you're very thankful for opportunities you get. You don't complain. You know to work really hard. You're not given as much as you give out. And it's also very militant in a sense. So when I started acting, especially on film, there's so much room for error in that. And there's so much just kind of like, ah, it's fine. It is what it is too. And then there's a lot of people walking around, maybe complaining when they shouldn't be, or doing, you know, it's like I said, room for error for like editing, or we can go back and do this again. And then there's continuity. And I think as a dancer, because of choreography and how intricate the technique of ballet specifically is, continuity just seems natural to me. It comes naturally. I was doing a music video once, and the DP was like, I love that every time you take a step forward, you step in the same exact spot on this carpet with the same foot the same way. Makes my life
awesome.
So much easier. And I didn't realize that that was helpful, but that's definitely from ballet specifically.
Well, now as you're a skilled actress, is there acting involved in dance?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Acting. I think acting started for me in dance because you have to create a character, but without words. So you're using your entire body and your face to get a story across. Right. There's even a whole dialogue in ballet that's like, you know, that means like death and no, and all sorts of things that people don't realize, or like to cut down somebody. There's all this kind of its own sign language.
Yeah.
So acting in ballet is much different, but it does help the acting on film.
So how did you hone your acting skills? Because I mean, obviously you were a dancer and you moved into some concentration of acting. Where did that ability come from?
I have no idea. I think it's genetic. You meet my grandmother, you meet my father, or even my mom. Like, the people in my family are just these theatrical, unique characters. I, you know, again, I'm so thankful for that. I do think I should train more. I would like to train more. That's actually my next goal. Is like, I think I want to do some more. I do think that I could train more, and I want to train more. That's my new goal this year, this season, if you will, is to do some more film acting training. Cause I did a lot for like musical theater and stage when I was younger. And then when I get a role, I try and get some coaching or get some opinions. But even if you have it genetically, it's still good to train it.
So when you're thinking about getting additional training, cause obviously you've done a lot with just through pure experience and also as a dancer with that experience, what kind of areas do you think about need or you wish for developing, or what more actors maybe should spend time trying to develop themselves as well?
I think like be more open to what a character can be. So I'll read a script and in my mind it'll be set in stone who this person is, right? Like, oh, I've already written it out. I've met this person in life somewhere. I've had a similar experience. This is what I see this person as. I think if you can try and fight the urge to do that and put that character already in a box, like this is what this character is once I've read the script to me, and fight the urge to do that and see maybe how it could be completely opposite or some totally different type of character portrayed entirely differently. Because I'll watch film or I'll watch movies, which is the fun homework part of being an actor, and be like, you know, I think if I read that script, I don't think I would have seen that character. I think I would have seen a different one, or even made a different sounding voice, or so on and so forth. So that's kind of something I think I need to work on more. And I think other actors should too. So easy for us to just internally take what we've gone through and be like, this is what this character is that I've read the script.
So when someone does tell you that, not like, or especially I guess it'll be a director like, no, it's not like that, let's do it like this, how hard is it for you to go, all right, I'm gonna remove everything I now thought about this character and rebuild the character apparently within the next 5 minutes to take the shot?
I think at first, when I first started out, it was difficult for me because I would get so hyper focused on what I thought the character was, and as a ballerina I was like, this is who it is, so I'm going to train myself to be this character and memorize what this is. And I forget to be more flexible because there's more room to be flexible in the film. But also it's much easier for me now that I've kind of realized that I used to do that at first. But then also as a dancer, you know, you're just getting quick changes. Like you'll do a dress rehearsal right before you go on stage and they're like, you know what, we're going to completely change all of this. And it's like, okay, so you have to be flexible and adaptable.
Jesus Christ.
Just come with it.
How the hell do you manage that one? Because I can't, I mean, in the last second being told to basically redo your entire dance thing, how do you like mentally just get yourself in that zone? I mean, I'd be freaking out. Like everyone knows me, like my anxiety would be like, oh my God, oh my God. I'm like,
I think it's just experience. You get used to it because that happens a lot. Somebody gets injured or somebody has to fill in for somebody else and then they're taller than the other person. So then this person has to go over here. Now this person has to go over here. And that means you're now doing everything on the left that you've been doing on the right for 2 months, you know? And I think you just have to learn to be aware, and it helps if you pay attention to what everybody else is doing too. Like I kind of try and make sure I know my other dancers' roles and their choreography. And then I also try to do that on set. Like just pay attention to what everybody else is doing. And then you won't have to ask so many questions and figure out, especially if like moving the camera or something or what somebody else's lines are. It's not just your lines you need to know. You need to know the entirety of it as much as you can. So that when there is a change, you can adjust to it.
So like when you're on the set, you memorize everybody's lines?
Not on purpose, but it does happen. You do. I at least memorize the scene, what's happening in the scene, in the events that it goes in. I kind of create like my own little like blocks in my head, right? And then within those blocks, I kind of know the cues when something's going to happen. That applies to me or to something around me. So just in case my shoulder's in it or something, I'm still reacting the same way after that line's happened or before. So you do memorize a few of the other actors' lines. And I think the more you work on a scene too, you just, if you're not accidentally memorizing their lines, I don't think you're paying attention enough.
Well, I mean, I'm obviously what you're doing is successful. You recently played, I'm probably get the name wrong, Kemi or Kimi?
Kemi.
Kemi in Star Trek Picard, which is awesome. The world of Star Trek. Well, obviously, I'm a big Star Trek nerd. I'm sure anyone who knows can look at me can just figure it out. I'm a Star Trek nerd. So how did you get involved with the show?
Well, I got cast for one. Actually, my parents were watching Picard and before, you know, COVID hit and they stopped filming. So they watched the first season and they were like obsessed with it because my dad is a big, big Next Generation fan.
Yeah.
And my mom just loves Patrick Stewart so much. So I watched the first season when I got the audition. So, because I was pretty sure it was Star Trek when I got the audition. And then I was reading and I was like, I think this is Picard. Because it's like a secret code name for those that you know, they give you the script. They don't tell you what you're auditioning for. They don't tell you. But there's no way it wasn't some type of Star Trek. Just the way it was written, I was like,
Was it like Technobabble or?
Well, one of the scripts said science officer.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's just.
Probably not the Cardassians.
Probably not. Probably not. Not Game of Thrones. No. So, yeah, right? So, yeah, I got the audition and then I was like, this is Star Trek. So I just started to watch the first season of Picard and. And then when I got the role, I decided to really get into Star Trek more. Because if you're going to play a character that's going to go down in like memory alpha and Star Trek history, like I'm going to have some respect for the big Trekkies out there somewhere. I'm going to get into the Star Trek more. I'm going to get into Picard too and the Next Generation a lot more.
So how far deep did you go down the rabbit hole of Star Trek? Because that's a deep hole. I mean, that's original show, so Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. That's a hell of a deep hole to go diving into.
I dove as deep as I could for the show because I did do some Deep Space Nine and things like that, right? And some Next Generation. And I grew up watching the original Star Trek with Shatner. Which like I said, I grew up watching all the 60s and 70s shows. Like, so I did watch Next Generation some more. I watched the episodes with Aquiel, the Hylian, because that's the species that I am, the humanoid species. So, man, I ended up on like a Reddit thread at night, like two glasses, three glasses, four glasses of wine in. And I was like, just I was like, I need to go to bed. I don't know what I'm doing. I didn't soak in everything, but yeah, it goes. It goes and goes and goes.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, the world of Star Trek, I mean, if you even just watch the shows, that's one big hole to fall into. But then there's the novels, you got the comic books, you got just the shit that people made up in their own heads and I've been posting about it for decades. That's funny. You're like on Lost. I would think of the people who are actually typing those Reddit things don't know when the actors from Picard is sitting there watching it, going, I gotta get all this, soak it up, soak it all up.
They have no idea how many people in the film industry are just like, just the people in general that are just reading these Reddits and these threads and these chat rooms. And you're just like, what? Oh my gosh. Like, yeah, it's wild.
That's wicked.
There's no idea.
So what were you told about the ensign when you got there? Was there any like information they gave you ahead of time, something like a background, anything?
Yeah, I got to see a picture of the ship and where I was going to be sitting before I got there. I got my I went in to fit for my Starfleet uniform like 4 times because I'm very small, so they had to really do a lot because it's so down to a science how the Starfleet uniform is cut. And you know, it's basically the space military, so it's like this inseam must stop here and land here in the cuff of your wrist, you know. So I was there a lot. And then when you're in there in wardrobe, just chatting about it, I was talking about it, oh, the ship, and oh, well, this is going to happen. Well, I heard this is going to happen. So slowly the pieces kind of came together before I got on set.
Well, you're one of the helmsmen, which, once again, historically speaking on Star Trek, you got your Sulu, you know, you have Lisanavius and her character. You have a lot of very famous helmsmen in Star Trek. So any pressure?
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of pressure. I did a lot of research on a lot of helmsmen, too, and just kind of watching how they handled the helm and stuff. And yeah, I felt really honored, too. Really honored.
So when you were on set, did you try to figure out what the things were supposed to have done? I know it's about somehow to like try to figure out what the buttons are supposed to do so it actually looks like you're actually doing something.
Yeah. No, I had to make up something in my head. I was like, all right, there's a lot going on here. And this guy, there's the tech, he changed the screen at certain times while like somebody would say a line or an explosion would go off and the screen would change. I don't know if it was like on a timer or if he was just back there hitting at the right times. So I was just trying, and then with my lines, you know, can you show me what you see and all that, that Rios, you know, or Picard hollers at me. And so I just tried to like make it up. And the buttons were pretty self-explanatory. They were like, they kind of had a layout to them. Like this one would open up a map or like where we were. And then there was some buttons for like, just general piloting, I guess. So I just tried to memorize a way to do it and do it the same time, same way every time. So that it didn't look like I was just over here playing like an organ.
Just randomly touching something. The problem is with Star Trek, I mean, I love Star Trek fans. The problem with us is that they will notice, be like, wait, when she did that, she touched that button there, but then she did the same thing, but touched that button.
I know.
What is wrong with the ship?
I know. I was aware of that. I realized that. I was like, they're going to be looking at what I'm doing. So I'm not going to give them anywhere. I tried really hard. There was one time where like I wasn't, didn't have my hands up here and they were like in my lap. And I don't even know why they used them. It was the only time I remember. And I remember doing that. I'm like, oh, I'm going to sit here for a second before we start rolling. And I think they were sneaky and they liked that cut before they said rolling or whatever or action. And they used it. I'm not sure what happened. I don't know why they used it. But I'm like, my hands are in my lap right there. Why?
wait. So there's a shot of you just like chilling at the thing when you're supposed to be doing stuff?
I'm not really supposed to be doing something. We're all just staring up at the, you know, I don't want to ruin anything here, but we're looking out at something, right? And my hands aren't up here. I don't have to be doing, I'm not flying anywhere. I'm not told to do anything. I'm not doing anything. So really, it's not wrong that my hands are in my lap, but it bothers me because I feel like she should just be, you know, like when you're riding a motorcycle, you kind of keep your fingers up near that clutch and the brake in case you need to grab them, right? But I was just lunch break.
You know, there's at least one fan now that's gonna have a whole storyline about, yeah, she just chills at her thing when she's not busy. Apparently, that's just what she does.
Yeah, you know, it is what I do. That's what I do. I'm just chilling.
They'll be like, something about your, on the, was it the Wiki fandom? They'll be like, Kemi, when she's not actually piloting, she just kind of chills there with her hands in her lap. And be like, wow. Could they are obsessive people.
Kemi, Ensign Kemi, the chillest helmsman.
So, Ensign Kemi, she's also, I'm going to get the, what is it, a Hellion? How do you pronounce that?
Hellion.
Okay, Hellion. So that they're an empathic species. So what did you know about them when you got there, like when you, in your research, and how did knowing about them help you decide what to do with the character?
Yeah, I did a lot of research on that. Because the episode doesn't give you as much information along with Aquiel, but they are empathetic, like telepathic. So, which is interesting because that kind of fits me as a person. I'm a very empathetic person, and I feel like when I'm empathetic towards somebody, I can like communicate better with them, right?
Yeah.
And they have a crystal. Oh my God, what's the crystal called? Somebody's gonna be like, she should know. I don't have it in my head right now. It's back there hanging out with my teacher from high school.
It's okay. Someone will shout it at the screen during the interview, you know, be like, yeah, it's this, will. God damn it.
You know what? I'm proud of them for knowing it. But they have their crystal that actually increases their ability to do this. So, and if you see the episode Aquiel Next Generation, she's with, who is she with in that episode? Jory, I think. And they are holding it together to kind of, so she can kind of read his mind and what he's thinking, and she can kind of figure out what happened in the events, so that he knows that she's not lying, because she was kind of like framed for something that she didn't do. And they have a very like deep cultural and rich cultural planet that they come from, where they're really into like traditions and very tribal traditions also, kind of, but they're very intellectual. So it helped a lot to do this character, because she's a Hylian, but now she's a helmsman, which is a really serious, you know, very analytical left-brained role on a ship, right? But she comes from this totally spiritual, emotional-based planet. So that helped me a lot with Kemi. So to kind of figure out, you know, how she would be, you know, struggling to meet both of those things and who she was.
So how did you tolerate the prosthetics?
Coffee. And I always talk about Bianca, but she was my prosthetics and makeup artist, and she was awesome. She's super cool. I tolerated them for her because she did a good job, and we had fun talking about music and spooky stuff because she's a spooky gal. I was there, like, I think our earliest time together in the morning, it was probably like 2:30 or 3 in the morning. Horrible. God awful. And you just, I don't know, she was really good at taking them off and then really taking care of my skin afterwards. She put really a lot of nice stuff on my skin afterwards so that it would heal for the next day. It's not really that, it's just a little drying. They were kind of, they weren't as uncomfortable as I thought they would be at all. I think the funniest part was that they had my eyebrows recreated, like almost my exact eyebrows.
What?
And then the prosthetic goes entirely over my eyebrows. And then every day she would put on eyebrows on top of the prosthetic. We're like, you know what? No, we're just going to go all the way down and just give you your eyebrows you already have, but over the top of this.
That's weird. So how like distracting is it to have these on your face when you're trying to act?
I think it helped my character. It helped me get into character, because I could kind of feel it. And it was, you just have to make more like expressions, like make them a little bit bigger so that it moves the prosthetic. Because if you don't open your eyes enough or really use your muscles on your eyebrows, you can't get the eyebrows themselves, the prosthetic, to move, because it'll move with your muscles because it's all over, right? So I did have to make kind of bigger expressions in the top of my face and be aware of that without making my mouth down here be too dramatic.
That's weird. I never thought about
it's
that.
It's weird, yeah. Yeah, I kind of got used to it. Just like stood in the mirror at my trailer a little bit, or right after she put it on, or especially we did the makeup test and I kind of messed with it a little bit. It wasn't like too much of an exaggeration, which I'm thankful for. Because sometimes I think about like, gosh, some of these actors, it's just full prosthetics and they have to like look sad and angry or just all the different emotions. And I'm like, man, they're getting a, like yoga, like face yoga on a daily basis.
So did you get to keep your prosthetics? Did they let you have that when you were done with them?
No, I was weird and I did ask for one though.
Oh, and did they give it?
No.
Seriously, they didn't give you your own prosthetic?
Didn't give me my prosthetic.
Well,
I
what are they
don't
doing
remember
with it?
I don't remember the conversation. I don't know if at the end I was like, you know what, never mind, I don't want it. Because I think that's maybe what happened. Because it's just kind of like, so, because when you take it off, you can't take it off all in one piece. It's just like pieces.
Oh,
You know, so
really?
it just kind of falls off a little bit in pieces. Yeah. Because they're so soft. They're not just like this thick Halloween store. Like, you know, they're so well made that they're very soft and, I guess, for lack of a better word, fleshy.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't get to keep it, you know? That'd be a cool little souvenir from the show.
I know, right? Yeah.
So you also get to act Star Trek with Patrick Stewart. What was that like?
It was great. It was lovely. Terry Metalis introduced me to him when I was on set, and he asked me what I thought of the ship. And then, you know, there's a couple stunts that I did where I just kind of like fell over with my phaser in my hand, you know, got thrown aback. And he came over and complimented me. And at one point, we got to talk a little bit about ballet, and I guess his ex-wife was a ballerina, and he was very fond of the ballet. I'm very impressed that she still does pliés to this day, every day. So yeah, it was nice getting to talk to him and work with him. And he's a really good actor, of course, like goes without saying. I guess the best word would be, the best way to explain him would be a kindly grandpa,
Oh,
kindly
that's
grandchild.
cool. Well,
Yeah, he's sweet.
I mean,
Yeah,
he's like one of the legends in Star Trek.
I
So,
know.
I mean, what is it like when he's like, good job on something? You're like, ah, you know, the Star Trek guy just complimented me.
Felt good. It felt really good. Yeah, it was like nice. I don't know. Maybe he's just being nice, but no, I
So
could also see that.
did you geek out with when you met him, or were you played or did you able to play it cool?
I just talked to him like a person. I mean, at the end of the day, he's just a person. We're all just people. Yeah,
Yeah.
we didn't really. I think he was like, no, I never thought in 30 years that I'd be on Star Trek again. And I kind of watched his mind go into the past and then come back, and I was like.
So you must have been like, I never thought in my 30 years I'd actually get on be on Star Trek.
Yeah, or get to meet him or work with him.
That must have been one of the coolest things. I mean, you're him, the gentleman who plays Rios as well. There's some great actors who are on were in Picard.
Rios is cool. Yeah, the gosh, what's his name? I forgot his name. I'm not good with names today, if you can tell. I
Yeah.
am
Neither. I mean, for me, I only ever knew him as Rios. So for me, he's Rios. What
Rios. Yeah.
the
Rios. He does a great job of that character too. Working with all of those, yeah, cool people, really good people, good at their job, good at what they do.
So how's
Very
it?
true.
So what's it been like being part of the Star Trek family now? Because I mean, Star Trek fans, even though they're quirky, they do embrace like it's almost every actor that's done something on Star Trek, they embrace those actors. They, you know, fawn over them at conventions. What has it been like for you to be part of that world?
They're like the nicest people. It's an awesome world. Yeah, it's warm and it doesn't feel like it's not fleeting, you know. There's like an appreciation for it as time goes on. You're like more appreciated. It's like, you know, there's other people that own superhero movies or this or that sort of pop culture stuff, and as time goes on they kind of get forgotten. But Star Trek world and the fans and stuff are really cool. They really hold on and remember, and they care, and so it makes you want to care back. And that's what the original idea of a performer and entertainer is to fans. It's like, I'm not doing this for me to get attention. I'm doing this to give you something. You know, it's the selfless thing, and then they, you know, love on you back and just keep going back and forth. And it kind of reminds me of that. Yeah.
And the great thing about being on Star Trek, I mean, anyone who has a character on Star Trek, eventually you're going to get cards of you. There's going to be Star Trek games with your character will be like one of the characters. They always choose everybody. So not to get too heavy, but you know they're going to end up having Kemi, you know, probably even action figures at this point. I mean, every character in Star Trek seems to continue living somewhere.
I hope so. That would be awesome. I'm kind of excited to see where it goes. I know a comic book is coming out. I think it's in April called Stargazer. Really? And yeah, I have it like pinned to let me know when it drops because it's, I'm hoping Kemi and some of the characters are in there. I'm not sure, but I mean, it's the Stargazer with,
I would hope so, right?
It's the in between chapters between season 2 and season 3 of Picard and his adventures with, I think, 7 of 9 on the Stargazer.
Oh, so, you never know. That should happen then, right?
Yeah, it should. Yeah. If you look it up, you can see it. It's not going to come out until April, but should be good.
How cool will it be able to see yourself in a comic book?
Right? That's what I'm saying.
You're going to have to start autographing a few. Have you been to conventions? Have you been doing the circuit?
I have not. I have not yet because the third season isn't out yet. And, you know, mostly conventions right now would just be a lot of like, what's going to happen in season 3? Are you in it? And I can't say any of that stuff.
That's literally my next question.
See?
So we'll play a game. You can, let's see, cough if you happen to be in season 3 at all. And if you're not, cough twice. I'm just kidding.
No, I can't. I'm going to cough 4 times to confuse everyone.
And if you get sued for giving away information, that's okay too. I'm just kidding.
That's okay too.
But you think after the third one, you're, do you think eventually the convention thing is something you're considering doing in the future?
I am. I want to do it now. Yeah. A lot of the stuff right after Picard, like the seasons of my episodes came out, those conventions that were coming up had already kind of been set in stone with who was going to be there. So yeah, I've been reaching out. We'll see. We'll see. Hopefully soon. So I get to do a couple of them. I was looking into the Star Trek cruise, actually. One of my fans said, you should do the cruise. I'll do the cruise if I don't have to pay to go on the cruise because I am not a rich person.
Well, you would assume. I mean, if you're a Star Trek actor, you'd be one of the guests, right?
I'd hope so, yeah. We'll see if they'll take me. But come on. I won't try and steer the ship.
Well, after Kenny becomes famous for the comic book, people are going to be in demand.
I hope so. We'll see. I don't know. I haven't even seen what's in that comic book.
You assume the writers would run it by you.
Say what?
I figured the writers would run it by you if your character's in it. It'd be like, hey, how do you think about this? Mm-hmm. Maybe you get a royalty or two. So what's next for you?
Right now I'm busy with my ballet company because I still do that as well. So I'm Clara in the Nutcracker this year. So that's the lead, if anybody knows Nutcracker.
Very
and
cool.
I've been busy rehearsing that. I got photo shoots coming up for that promotional stuff on Friday. And I've been submitting some of my works that I created in the past to some film festivals.
Oh, that's awesome.
Directed and created. So fingers crossed on that.
And maybe a season 3 of Picard. We don't know. But
we don't know.
Well, you're fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And anything you find out about this comic book or
thank you so much for having me. You too.